What do you think you're doing?
It's a special they got going on. You get a free stack of cash with every fill-up. Some luck, huh?
How stupid can you be?
We better get out of here.
You take that money back.
I'm serious, man. We better get going.
We'll get going as soon as you bring back that money.
I'm not bullshit. Move
out. I'm not going anywhere until you return.
Here we go.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They start talking.
They'll ask him a question.
He's coughing.
He'll just talk to this guy. Like,
yeah. Someone will say, hey, welcome to Fascinated with Films, and this other person over here is talking. You don't know what's going on. Hey, look, I just welcomed us in.
Did
hello.
Nice.
I'll do it official. Hello. Welcome to Fascinated with Films. I want to do it like Michael Buffer.
Are we back to that name?
Hello. What? Fascinated with Films?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did we leave that name?
We did Tubi Tuesdays.
That wasn't the name of the
overall
show. I know
it was a sub-brand, but...
No, we got the sub-brand of Wild Card Wednesdays is what we're going with now.
That's what you
came
up with in the last 10 seconds?
Last 10 seconds, I came up with it, man. Nice. So, how are you doing? We haven't done a pod in probably 3 or 3.5 weeks. Last pod we did, hope everyone enjoyed it, was the wrestling pod.
That wasn't the last one we did.
Well, last one's... The people.
Oh, the team. Oh, your team. Team.
No, the last one we did was definitely a wild card, but I'm not sure what was on your list last time.
I couldn't tell you what was on my list today.
Yeah.
Well, I had to write it down.
That's true. So, how you been? It's just hot as hell outside now.
It's beautiful.
Actually, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's still hot. It's still hot for me. I went and did yard work on
Sunday.
You
will beg for this weather in about 3 months.
That is true. That is true.
I was sitting out last night. It was 72, and it was that, you know, that moment where, like, should I get a sweatshirt?
Nah. I'll just tough it
out. That's the perfect moment. Yeah. You can get to that moment, and that was what it was for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, see, I work overnight, and every once in a while you have to go
into the... the sun.
Well, I go into the garden center, so I feel the weather out there sometimes when it's cold or it's where it's hot. And there were times out there in the winter, people forget Florida gets so damn cold that sometimes it'll get down to like 20 degrees. So yeah, I think we'll be accepting to like 75 to 85 degrees is like kind of considered the perfect weather here in Florida. So
yeah.
Have you watched any movies? There's some great movie announcements I want to talk about, but, I've watched
Oppenheimer.
Oh, nice.
But I skipped a lot of love story stuff and a lot of relationship
that whole bomb stuff.
No, I kept the bomb stuff in. I don't know what it is about some movies that they're like, they feel the need to put some sort of relationship, especially that one was true. So it's like, that's
I get
fine.
It.
But another movie where they're like,
I thought her whole character wasn't even needed in there. I understand what they want to show, that he's kind of toiling over his issues and everything, and he needs to talk to his wife and everything. But I remember she actually, the character kind of came into its own towards the end where she was kind of getting forceful and stuff. But
yeah.
Towards the beginning, I'm like, I'm.
I went in
she
thinking,
was already,
it was gonna be a, thinking it was going to be a buy-up on how just focusing on getting the bomb
yeah.
ready, the stuff I behind
mean,
the bomb. They showed a lot of that stuff, but it was always wrapped around this, are you a communist?
Yeah. It's true.
And I guess that was a very important topic back then. Now,
so you liked it or you didn't love it? You liked it?
I liked it, but I cut a lot out of it that I knew I
wasn't
going to
like. Maybe a second viewing would probably be...
it wasn't a movie like Zodiac where I can say, 3 hours, sit down, I'm going to watch this whole movie. This is definitely not.
No, I think Killers of the Flower Moon would be more of that.
I think so.
I think, but the Robert Downey Jr. stuff was stellar.
Everybody
man.
Was great. Listen, it wasn't a bad movie at all. It just, they had an audience in mind, and I'm not it.
The only actor I couldn't care for, and I don't know. Sometimes he's a great actor, and I love watching him do his things.
Randy
Quaid. And then, no, I guess he would fall into this category of what I'm talking
That's
about.
That's what I pictured.
No, he's a good actor, but every once in a while he'll give a delivery, and I'm like, is he a great actor? Come on, because that delivery is just horrible. And it's Matt Damon, man. I don't know what it is about Matt Damon. Every once in a while he'll have a delivery. Like when he almost seems like he's pretending to get angry in Oppenheimer. And I was like, come on, man. We need something that really, someone that really seems like he's threatening or something like that.
I hear what you're saying. I liked him in that role.
Like, if they had the guy who played, like, LeMay in that 13th Hour in there, like, not a superstar, just a grizzly-ass, pissed-off dude.
They wanted A-listers in here.
I would love to see, like, Bruce McGill. You know who Bruce McGill is?
Of course.
He was the guy from...
Digstown.
No, that's Bruce Dern. Bruce McGill is, you were close. Bruce McGill is the guy from The Insider who, he's a very Southern guy. He was also in that Tales from the Crypt episode where him and his brother Bruno Kirby were trying to scam the insurance company. He was in Animal House. He's hard to say. If you looked up Bruce McGill, you know who I'm talking about. Not to be confused with Everett McGill, who is also really fantastic. So you rewatched Oppenheimer. Was there some other stuff that you... Oh, you didn't rewatch. That was your first watch. That was pretty good. That was my first watch. It was on like one of the free streamers.
Peacock, maybe?
Yeah. Peacock's got all the wrestling, man.
Peacock's got half the golf.
Is it really?
ESPN has Plus has the other half.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that. So yeah, Peacock's doing pretty good. And it doesn't cost a lot, that network, that streamer.
One's $6.99, the other one's like $8.99.
We get it for free, I think, because of something, or maybe it's because we use our brother's thing. But I remember it is not a whole lot. That's why I love those. Any of those streamers that it's like $7-$8 and you can cancel anytime you want, I'm all for them because... you really need like three or four of them to be able to catch everything if you're trying to watch all sorts of different shit. And every once in a while, Peacock will drop something big or Amazon will drop something big, which is one of my announcements. If everyone heard the last week, you would have to be under a rock if you didn't realize that there was a Godzilla movie made that apparently is amazing and that everyone loves, that it's not this weird Kong versus Kong X Godzilla, which looks like the silliest shit in the world. I'll still watch it when it comes out on stream because I'm a Godzilla guy.
I mean, some people are just Godzilla.
But the commercial where he's riding, where King Kong's riding on his back and shit, and it's like a buddy comedy. I was like, what the hell is actually going on here? Well, if you didn't realize that the best foreign language movie, or the best special effects, sorry, it was up for best foreign language, but best special effects at the Oscars was won by Godzilla Minus One, which is a weird name for it. I don't know if that's something they're doing now because I just saw the trailer for Transformers One. I guess that's what they're considering it now, a prequel.
So if a minus three is three before the original?
I have no idea what that title means. Maybe it's like the day before something was going to launch or something. I don't know. I have to watch it. But it was announced that it's going to be available on Amazon Prime on May 3rd. So I am like stoked because that just happens to be one of the ones we have. If it had come to the Paramount streamer, which I don't have, I think I would order it just because so I could see it because I am super stoked. It's like the one day I have off next week too is May 3rd. And I was like, oh, it's going to be a big day because I can watch Godzilla and then it goes into May 4th. And not only is it your anniversary, it's also Star Wars Day. So I get to watch a whole shitload of Star Wars.
I don't think Maria realized that it was Star Wars.
It was Star Wars Day. We were asking that. I was like, yeah, I think that's one of those.
She's definitely not a Star
Wars fan. It's how it allows.
She probably... like Star Wars?
Well, I would tell her right now that it allows everyone else to remember it's your anniversary because it's the only way I'd remember it, that the fact that it's Star Wars Day. So because whenever Star Wars Day hits, I'm like, oh, shit.
Every time I say I was married on May 4th.
So I'll definitely be watching...
Star Wars?
I'll definitely be watching Star Wars, but it's one of those things...
You go to Empire Strikes Back.
I go to Rogue One for sure. Rogue One is awesome. It's the best modern... Star Wars movie other than the Andor series, which is probably
because they didn't try to make a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, the Andor series is the best Star Wars thing ever done in my opinion, but Rogue One's one of the best modern movies, but I will definitely be watching Empire or New Hope. New Hope and Empire are both on the same level. Return of the Jedi is a minor step down, but those two are just classic.
Return of the Jedi gives me...
still goofy, but it's still good.
It gives me lots of, like, we didn't know whether we were going to see Star Wars again because Luke had got in an accident, right?
Oh, it was big for us when we were a child. It was like one of the first date movies you ever went on.
Yeah, because we knew the other Star Wars. We had watched them a million times afterwards, but this one was ours coming out in the theater. When did it come out? 83.
1980 was Empire.
Probably don't even remember Empire in this.
We saw it in the theater.
You probably saw it. But
I do remember it, actually. It was very vague, though. I only remember bits and pieces. 77
was the first one, right?
77 was the first one. Definitely don't remember that.
I would have only been four. They wouldn't have taken me to that.
No, but you must have seen it. You must have, because remember, you had all the toys like before we even got cable.
That's true.
So I'm wondering if you did... if they did take you to see Star Wars in like 77 or maybe
did
the
re-release.
Did re-release them, but I think they were re-released in like 82, right before Jedi came out.
Yeah.
So we might have all gone and seen Jedi. That might be what I'm remembering if I remember Empire, actually. So, yeah.
So when did the Star Wars figures start coming out right away? Was that after?
Remember they did that...
those were our favorite things.
Oh, yeah.
Getting one in an Easter basket... and then you get five or six for your birthday.
So good.
And a giant
They came out right away. Remember, they had that early bird special where they, if you, you would get a certificate.
Picture of what you were going to get.
Yeah. Sorry, kids, you can't have the toy, but here's a piece of cardboard
telling you how great it is.
I have to stay good for another 3 months so I can get them in the mail or something. But yeah, if you had those, you you made a whole shitload of money. So I still have a lot of those old 77 ones. But yeah, so the May 4th Be With You is coming out. There's been an announcement that the new Predator movie, remember the last one was Prey, and it took place during the Native American times in like the 1800s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this next one is, it's the sequel to Prey, but they're doing exactly, they rarely do this, that what we want them to do, and me and Justin are both thrilled at this because we're sitting here wondering, why don't they just jump to different time periods? Well, World War II is going to be, it's called Prey No Man's Land, I think, and it's Predator during World War II, and it's going to be fucking great. They had it served up on a silver platter for them to do like a Shogun Ronin type thing.
I want to see Predator during the Jurassic.
I would watch that. I'm telling you, I would watch everyone.
Dinosaurs.
Don't excite
Predator?
Me this early in the morning. Because I would totally watch that shit.
It's in the movie.
It's in the movie. But yeah, if they did like a Shogun type series like that, I would be all for that too. Like you've killed my master and now the Ronin has to go out and like singly like destroy the Predator character. I would be all about that, man. A lot of people were fooled. I went up north and people, my buddy Jay was like, did you hear about Goonies 2? I saw the poster. I was like, when did you see that poster? Because I can tell you when you saw it. You saw it on April 1st, didn't you? Yeah. And he's like, God damn it.
I don't.
He thought it for weeks too.
I rarely get taken because I really care enough about. That was a cat.
Yeah, cats just walk by in this house. Yeah. Be ready for it.
I'm ready. I can be my ready now.
What were you saying? You rarely get taken by it because you're.
Oh, April Fool's stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
yeah.
on my guard way ahead.
No, I usually do. I eventually, every once in a while, I will
pranks.
Get fooled. No, you and
I
my
hate
wife.
Pulling pranks on people. Oh, I would never pull a prank on anybody.
Yeah.
Only because I never want to be.
No, I don't want to be that guy either. I'm with you there. Me and my wife never have to worry about
like
each other.
Like, even as bad
pranks.
If you were with a group of people and one of them went to the bathroom or something and someone else came back and said, where's Frank? And it's like, oh, he went home. And
yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, I would never even joke about that.
No, no. It seems like a weird kind of thing. Some people are all for it, too. I don't mind it. Like, no, I don't think I like it in any aspect.
No. Practical jokes. Wallace was
well, that's the problem is you when you find somebody that really loves them, they really love them.
Well, he spent time. Remember, he found a flyer for Fest.
That's right. That's
and he
right.
changed all the band names from the names of the band to like silly names.
That was a
and then
intricate.
Stuck them on all the bar.
Yeah, he told me about
and
it one day.
A couple hundred bucks to get it printed to make it look like the other thing.
I mean, you've got to spend money to do your prank. You've already gone next level. Some actors are huge like that. I know Clooney was a huge prank guy.
I punched him in the nuts.
Yeah. I was like, maybe that's how the David O. Russell fight started. We don't even know
maybe.
About it. He pranked his ass.
Yeah.
He says, you just put glue in my cereal milk? What the fuck? And that's another level of pranks when they destroy something of yours. Like, you're going to destroy, like, people with that
we
salt
did
and
some
sugar
pranks.
Thing.
We did some pranks in Christian school.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, yeah.
We went on a retreat, and people...
Oh, I think you told me about
people
this.
People were messing
one of the
up
teachers.
Each other's houses to and... running away before they could figure out who did it.
Oh, wow.
So what my house did with once Kennedy left, he was the head of our house, is we trashed our own house. And someone had taken all his prescription medication. That's the only reason we fucked up.
Oh, wow.
Because we could have said, we have no idea. And everybody was so angry at everybody else for messing our house up,
yeah.
and we're the ones that did it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. But he took his medicine. We had to admit it at the end, so it wasn't as fun. But.
Oh, that's next level. Yeah, so... there wasn't a whole lot of new movies I haven't seen. I haven't seen a new movie in a couple weeks. I've been watching a lot of old movies for sure, and three of them obviously are on my list that we're going to be talking about today because we got some wild cards to talk about. You've got some wild cards?
I picked a theme.
A theme. I like a good theme.
I'm going to
call
an audible
theme.
From when I have an honorable. So I did all movies that were released in 1994.
Okay.
30 years ago. So I've
94 is a good year for fucking movies.
I'm going to give the honorable mention. I was going to do The Client, but I don't think I know the ending enough.
You don't have to talk about the ending.
Okay, I'm going to keep
the client. I wouldn't even have known that The Client came out in 94. That's a
me either. I just
that
went,
seems
I,
almost
I
early.
Got curious because I kept seeing 30 years since this movie, and I was like, they all seem like they came out at the same time. So I looked up, found out one of them Pulp Fiction was up in 94.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I said, so the movies came out in 94.
Which one you want to talk about, Pulp Fiction or The Client? Keep your third for a secret.
I'm going to talk about The Client.
Let's talk about The Client. Client, we've talked. I'm sure we did when we talked courtroom dramas and everything, but it's been so long, too.
I don't
too.
Even know if we've talked about it when the courtroom drama
No, was. I think we did when we talked courtrooms. I do remember a vague kind of memory, but I'm all about it because this was a great movie. So, were you a John Grisham fan? Most of his early movies are all great.
I've never read a book of his ever, but I've watched so many movies.
Very easy reads.
But he's very good storyteller.
The Firm is one of my favorite novels. It's one of my favorite novels I read, though. It's one of the there's a few books I can pick out that I read and then went to see the movie right afterwards while it was fresh in my memory. And they did such a great job with that movie. I was hooked on the John Grisham movies. I think that was the first one I saw. And then Time to Kill came out, and then probably The Client. So why don't you, it stars...
The now-deceased Brad Renfro.
Brad Renfro, man. I was one of those Sarandon, those actors we lost way too young. Brad Renfro was very talented. Fugitive. Tommy Lee Jones? One of the killers is the guy from... he was the one from Stripes. They used to call me the Cruiser.
Oh, yeah.
Should have called you the Dork. Let me pull his name up because he's always a great character actor. Client.
The guy that plays the hip. Well, Anthony Paglia's in this, right? Isn't he the Blade?
Who's the really? I'll tell you that I'm right on the cast right now. So we've got Brad Renfro, Susan Sarandon, Tommy Lee Jones, Mary Louise Parker, which I can always take or leave.
She wasn't in a ton of it.
Yes, you are correct. Anthony LaPaglia.
Yeah.
JT Walsh, always fucking great. JT Walsh.
About 3 months ago.
Anthony Edwards.
I think I had to cut it short by 20 minutes.
My wife is a new formed Anthony Edwards fan because of ER.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently a whole group of people loved him from ER. And I never saw an episode. So
I never saw an episode.
Will Patton's in this. He'll always Will Patton.
He was
Zodiac.
Zodiac. He'll always be one of my favorites. Now that's weird. Yeah. I wouldn't have liked him ever. Like I would have never remembered his name ever.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that Revenge guy of the
from,
Nerds like, guy.
From Friends? Oh, yeah. No, he's from Revenge of the Nerds.
Yeah. Will Patton, I absolutely love Will Patton, man. Yeah. And back in the day, he was killing it. Bradley Whitford was in this.
It's a great cast.
Anthony Held, who is
the guy that
who is the guy from Silence of the Lambs. Kim Coates?
Yeah.
Kim Coates is great. I still haven't come to the guy I was talking about. Man, this keeps going deeper, man. William H. Macy, Ozzie Davis, William Sanderson, who's like, that's my brother, Daryl, my other brother, Daryl.
Yeah.
Walter Horowitz, he was in one of the, he was in that Seinfeld episode. He played the cable guy that tried to hook up Kramer's cable, and Kramer kept dodging him.
Yeah.
Really, really funny. Bunch of good character actors. Ron Dean's a great character actor. Dan Castrovalante is in this movie.
Homer Simpson.
That's fucking Homer Simpson is in this goddamn movie.
It doesn't get any better.
Maybe I'm not thinking of the right cast because I don't even see the guy I'm talking about here, unless he goes so deep that I'd have to keep going now. Schumacher is the director. That's why I wanted to do it. Very unlike any of the other Joel Schumacher movies you'll come across. He's deceased now, but he was a very proud gay man in Hollywood, and he used to interject some of his gay ideas into his movies, and always to a great thing. Like the best one is probably either Batman with Nipples, or you got the saxophone player from Lost Boys.
Yeah.
It's a great one. So you always get a great little kind of thing with Joel Schumacher, but then he did a couple movies.
It's funny how many people remember that saxophone player. I saw an article about him 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah. He goes to cons. He's making a career just out of doing that one fucking thing. And he'll play.
Lip sync to sax.
Yeah. He'll
probably
play
didn't
like.
Even play the sax.
Friday
he grabbed
night
this
gigs.
Guy off Muscle Beach. He doesn't play the sax.
No, he does. I think he does play that.
He probably didn't
no,
know
No, I think
it when
he does. He plays gigs and shit like that.
Okay.
My favorite Joel Schumacher movie will always, hands down, be, and you would think Lost Boys, but no, Falling Down. Falling Down is my favorite thing. Yeah. But The Client was right up there with one of his good ones. So why don't you, to those who aren't familiar with The Client, why don't you give us our little breakdown about what it was?
So Brad Renfro, he's probably 13 and his
super young
brother's probably 8. Anyways, he's a troublemaker. Yeah. He reminded me of Matt when he was a kid.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I get
his
that.
Character. Like, he took his little brother, and he was smoking with his little brother.
It's like Louisiana. Is it like Louisiana South?
Close to Louisiana, because that's where the guy was from that drove there. He drove there because he was grew up there.
Okay, I got
and
you.
And so I rewatched the opening scene just so I could get that tight.
Nice.
So
the rest of they're going off the wishy-washy.
Susan Sarandon, lawyer.
I think I'm pretty sure that's Runaway Jury, dude.
Is that Pelican Brief?
They do all kind of blend together, though.
Pelican Brief is Louisiana.
Yeah.
New Orleans. Any movie that takes place in New Orleans, I'm a huge fan of.
Really? Yeah, I get that.
I love New Orleans.
I just
is my favorite city.
Really? I never knew that. I never knew your favorite city.
I've been to that city more than any.
Huh.
I've been to Louisiana more than I've been back to Boston.
I would not have guessed that. I would have guessed you would have said, well, if I was committed to the United States, yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that. I would have guessed maybe Boston or something like that. But
Louisiana. Anyway, so Brad Renfro's smoking cigarettes like bad kids do in the woods, near like a quarry like we used to hang out at. And he sees a Cadillac pull up. So they ditch down under the leaves or behind a bank, and then they're looking up, and the guy's like hooking a hose up to his
like a big fat guy, right?
Yeah. And you know who it is?
Who's that? Someone I didn't name because I named fucking 40 people.
Jack from Twin Peaks, the poker dealer.
Oh, interesting. I wouldn't have got that pull.
I had to look him up because every time I saw him in the scene, I was like, I know this guy from something.
Yeah.
But he was that creepy.
That takes me out of more movies than anything.
He's the one that, he killed Laura Palmer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or no, dad killed Laura Palmer.
Well, the dad possessed by Bob killed Laura Palmer. It's complicated, folks. Yeah.
That's a whole podcast. Never mind. Anyways, he's hooking up a hose to the tailpipe. Brad Renfro's like, he's going to kill himself. I saw it on TV.
Yeah.
So he goes up there and he pulls the hose out. And the guy comes out and grabs him and brings him in. Hooks the hose back up and says, now you're going to die with me. And starts drinking and taking pills. And then he just sort of spills his guts.
Yeah.
How he's an accountant or lawyer for the Blade, who's Anthony Pagula's character. He killed somebody in a deal, and he buried the body, and he knew where the body was.
Do you know Anthony Pagula is Australian, and he has a thick accent that he never uses?
I probably knew that, but
it's crazy. Every once in a while, and he's got like a brother who looks like a twin. He might be a twin brother, but every once in a while, you hear an interview when they'll use his Australian accent. And he's like, "Who the fuck? What is he doing here?"
Maybe he's doing. He's like, "That's the worst accent I've ever heard."
Yeah, because he almost never uses it in films.
It's always Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's always Brooklyn. Or that kind of
New Jersey-esque.
Whatever his fake English accent he learned back
in the
day. I
can spot Brooklyn. I can spot New York, but I can't tell you the difference between like the Bronx and Staten Island.
I love LaPaglia. I'm sure he's still acting and doing stuff, but I just haven't seen him in anything.
He's real
forever.
Big.
He's big. He got thick. Not as thick as Michael Ironside. Michael Ironside gained 100 pounds at least, but he plays roles like he played this cowboy with this huge cowboy hat on, and you're watching this big muscly guy. He must be 400 pounds. Yes. And then he'll speak, and you're like, holy shit, that's Michael Ironside.
That's right.
But he seems to be killing it with the roles he's picking up, so I love that people are doing that. It's like when somebody becomes like a dad type character, and I'm like, that's him for now on.
I mean, they have to make that
one
transition.
Of my movies, I'll talk about somebody that was like one way when he was younger, and then once he did role, just changed the type of stuff he did.
So, as you can imagine,
Brad Renfro knows the skeletons in the closet, basically.
He now knows, and they don't know if he knows.
Yeah.
They just know he was in that car, and he managed to grab the gun from him. He managed to get out of the car and hide. The guy kills himself, and they want to subpoena him to come and give deposition about what he heard because they want to nab the Blade.
Yeah.
And who's in the mob.
For people that aren't familiar too, John Grisham is not only one of the best novelists. He was a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I he might even still been practicing
he owns that genre.
Oh yeah.
He owns that genre.
It's like not as much anymore, but used to be able to throw.
Look up John Grisham's house, biggest house.
Really?
I don't know. I guarantee you.
A lot of those. Nice. It's a shame we lost a lot of those novelists back in the day were just pumping out movies, books that were going to become movies beyond Stephen King, obviously. But you had Grisham, you have Crichton, and you have Tom Clancy. All three of those guys, when they were writing him, you're like, when's the movie coming out? When's the movie coming out? And Grisham was totally that way.
I wish I liked to read. I like articles. Maybe I have ADHD. I don't think I do.
I'm glad I read back in the day because, I don't have time for it now.
I
don't have time for it. I barely have time for a movie, so if I'm going to choose between a book and a movie I can get through in an hour and a half, it's going
to
be the movie.
And then I'll think to myself, well, you hit golf balls for 2 hours today. You could have read for half
of that. Well, there's that.
But then I was like, golf ball,
golf balls.
Hitting is my exercise.
It needs to happen.
Don't judge me.
So
anyways, he knows he has to go to the courthouse, and they're gonna he didn't bring his mother. His mother is what's her name? You name her.
Mary Louise Parker.
Yeah. She's works at a diner, and she was like,
never cared for her as an actress.
She was good in Weeds.
Yeah. Even Weeds, I got sick of her after the first season. I'm like, I get it. She kind of annoys me.
She plays that.
That character annoys me.
She plays that character that I don't give a shit.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it is. I'm above the law and you can't catch me type of thing. And I think she does that in a lot of roles. I liked her in Fried Green Tomatoes, but she was a little different than that. And that film and the other stuff. But
so he realizes they're trying to strong arm him. So he goes, he sees Susan Sarandon doing some lawyer stuff. And he goes and tries to get her to hire him.
Brad Renfro was next. I don't know if he was nominated for this movie, but he damn well should have been, because Brad Renfro was talented from the second he was in his first movie to the second he did his last movie, that Informers movie, where he was part of that child kidnapping ring with Mickey Rourke. Man, he was fucking good in that movie. Or At Pupil. God damn, he was great in At Pupil.
Can't watch At Pupil again.
Most Brad Renfro movies, this might be one of the most watchable Brad Renfro movies, because Bully, fucking At Pupil, Informers is super difficult to watch. I'm
trying to remember. It sounds so familiar. Like,
what's this?
Informers.
Oh, Informers was really creepy. It had, it was Bret Easton Ellis movie. It had that great music that went through the whole thing. Billy Bob Thornton was in it with Kim Basinger in one storyline. Yeah. It was just difficult. It dealt with, this AIDS is the first sequel. Started out. They were all getting
sequel,
AIDS.
This is, what's her name, sequel to, what the hell is it?
You know that thing.
Who's the director? And you'll know exactly.
Of what movie?
Informers.
Informers? That was one of Bret Easton Ellis' only directed movies. I think he directed that.
It's somebody that produced another movie, and when you know it is, you'll be like, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It was difficult for a lot of people. A lot of people didn't see it, though. It was like one of those indie movies that came out and just kind of went up the wayside.
That folk singer was in it. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Chris Isaacs. Chris Isaacs, yeah. He was really good.
You ever
watched
the Chris Isaacs show? That's a crazy show.
Very
old school.
So Tommy Lee Jones, this was pre or after The Fugitive was 90. This was right after Fugitive. So he must have done this right afterwards. He did The Fugitive, then that Cobb movie came out.
He played
out,
that
and then
guy.
He
played that charismatic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to get what I want because I'm better than you.
He played that all the way through The Hunted. Even in The Hunted, he was playing that character. Then when he did No Country for Old Men, he kind of played that different character. Now he did, that old guy.
He did, but he was smarter. I think he was still rough around the edges, which is kind of the...
I'm not sure what he's doing now, if he's kind of acting or not. Brad Dourif announced this week that he retired from acting of anything that's not involved with Chucky. He says he'll do Chucky, and the only reason he's doing Chucky is because of his daughter. His daughter rules that franchise now.
Oh, okay. She owns it.
No, she doesn't own it, but she's one of the main characters, and she's the thread that's been going through, other than Jennifer Tilly, I guess. Her and Jennifer Tilly. Fiona Dorf and Jennifer Tilly are everything when it comes to Chucky. And they're in season 3 or season 4 of the TV show. So
Jennifer Tilly.
Yeah. She got lucky in a lot of her career with different stuff that she fell into. So
I understand why. I really like her despite all the things that annoy the shit out of her.
Yeah, I always liked her.
She annoys people. Some people.
So yeah. So bring us down to kind of, you don't have to go through the whole movie here, but
that was it.
So they bring in, basically, he finds himself a lawyer with Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon's not equipped to handle what she's...
Because she's death threats, people showing up at the house with guns and trying to kidnap the kid and everything.
At one point, before he was about to go on the stand and tell what he... Because they wanted to subpoena him to come and testify. They want to put... They haven't been able to catch the blade.
Was he the protector or was he a cop, Tommy Lee Jones?
Tommy Lee Jones was...
He was trying to get the blade?
Maybe Justice Department.
Oh, okay.
Or FBI. Either FBI or Justice
Department.
Was there
a car explosion in this where somebody wired someone's car? Because that seems like that's always in a lot of Christian movies.
That played a lot. That went played out longer than...
Pelican Brief, that was the whole premise. That was the whole premise of it, yeah. I think they did that all the time. That was another thing Bruce McGill was in. Did you ever see that one where with Jamie Foxx and... where Jamie Foxx was the lawyer and everything, and Bruce McGill got blown up in a car in the movie. I can't remember the name of it.
I hear Jamie Foxx and lawyer, and I'm like, nope.
Nope. I don't know why. I just don't see it. All right. I'm going to go talk about mine here. And I've got three movies. They do have kind of a current theme. They two of them are balls-out, big-time comedies. But one of them is kind of a smarter comedy that's a little bit more modern. I want to check the date of that one. I'll talk about that one first. And I'll end on the one that I had I just watched yesterday, but I was super thrilled to see it. And this will turn a lot of people off just hearing this director, but it's one of his more palatable kind of movies to watch. And also one of those movies that you probably wouldn't even know it was him if you're watching it, because he falls in such this weird niche for a lot of people, is Woody Allen. I can see why a lot of people don't like him, but he has made a few good movies in there, and as long as you not have to look at him, it's a lot easier. And one of them is 2011's Midnight in Paris. It's also a great time travel movie that people do not think of.
Now, I thought it was great.
I loved it. I'm a
history buff.
Yep. And it takes place in Paris, and you got time travel, and I mean, it has everything. It has great actors. I should pull up the actor.
Because I was more interested in the relationships that these people, because a lot of the writers flocked to Paris, you know, Renaissance.
During the 20s.
It was like a Renaissance was it 30s for or writing. 20s? And it was before World War II.
1920s. So it's going back to the 1920s.
Yeah. And
it was after World War One.
Just after World War One. So rebuilding, everybody's excited.
Because Corey Stahl's character is one of the best in this, and he plays Hemingway.
Hemingway was the best character in this movie.
Hemingway has had so many different eras of his life. To get Hemingway right after he got back from the war is an interesting thing to visit, because he's not the guy with the cats in the keys at this point. You know, he's the guy that, I've seen shit. I got to write it down. Yeah. We got to experience life. Let's go punch somebody.
He used to love to fight. So drink and fight.
Oh, man. Yeah, he definitely embodied that. So just to give everyone a brief kind of rundown, if you're not familiar with Midnight in Paris, it's super fun, too. And there's certain stuff I won't reveal about it, because it's a time travel movie, and not at its surface. On its surface, you got Owen Wilson, who's married to Rachel McAdams. The relationship's not good. His father-in-law is our guy who played Kurt Fuller, who's... from Wayne's World. Russell, he's not your friend.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not your friend. He's a great character actor.
Put the flashlight down, Russell.
Yeah. So good. So he's in a relationship with Rachel McAdams. He's not too thrilled. They're in Paris. They're actually going out with another couple. Michael Sheen plays one of them.
Wasn't he engaged?
Yeah, they were engaged. But she's going... They're being toured around Paris by one of her old flames, who's played by Michael Sheen, who's the guy from Frost Nixon. Mm-hmm. I just heard something about him the other day. He gives almost, like, very much like Paul Newman, gives almost all his profits to charity, because he has so much money now, apparently. He just gives it away.
Where is he getting all this money?
From his acting gigs. Like, he'll do
I
acting.
I don't see him in much.
No, he's in a ton.
Okay.
Yeah, Michael Sheen's been in a ton. He's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of Twilight money and Underworld money. He was in Twilight. He's
got that Twilight money?
Yeah, man. You want that Twilight money. We all strive for the money. Twilight money.
You can make fun of... Was it Robert Patterson all you want?
Oh,
he's got Twilight money.
He's still fucking... Him and that girl are still fucking cashing those checks for sure. So what happens is he doesn't want to hang out with his fiancé's ex, and he's getting shown up by him. Because
I can't imagine a fiancé that would put you in that position.
It's stupid. And she's a bitch from the start. She kind of plays her mean girl's character all kind of grown up.
Who is it again? Rachel?
Rich McAdams. Okay. The girl from Red Eye.
Yeah.
She's a great actress.
She was from one of the... Matthew McConaughey.
She was from the movie that you like, Riz, is the Boston Priest movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was so good. The Spotlight. She was great in Spotlight.
I was thinking of the TV show, the miniseries she was in with.
TV show, miniseries.
Maybe Kevin Bacon and...
I'm thinking Kevin Bacon. I don't know. So what happens is he just goes off at night, and at midnight on this one street... This old-timey 1920s carriage just shows up out of nowhere and picks Owen Wilson up. And basically, when he turns the corner, it is 1920s Paris, and he's experiencing everything. And the next day, it drops him off, and he goes back to the modern time. So every night, he has to keep making up excuses to Rachel McAdams. I'm going to go out for a walk by myself tonight. And what he's actually doing is he's transporting himself back to Paris, and he's hanging out. He's a writer. He's a struggling writer. And he's talking to... What, I always forget who Kathy Bates' character
is. She's playing...
Gertrude Stein.
Yeah.
So he ends up meeting one person, and he says, I'm having trouble as a writer and everything. And I think he meets Hemingway first. And he's like, Hemingway's like, I want to introduce you to somebody. I got a woman that reads a lot of my stuff, and she's real good. She's Gertrude Stein. And he's like, wait, you're going to introduce me to Gertrude Stein? And when she shows up to Gertrude Stein's house, Gertrude Stein is having a conversation with Picasso. So it's all this group, and later on...
And they all looked really close.
Oh, really good. Corey Stahl was so fucking good as Hemingway. The only other person that rivals him in this movie was Adrian Brody as Salvador Dali. He played a great Salvador Dali, where I don't know if Dali was like the type of person you could actually have a conversation with, or if he was just as outrageous and wild as Adrian Brody played
him. What's Wilson Brothers this?
Owen. The Wedding Crashers one. I like both of them.
I like him. He's kind of the hapless loser. He plays that hapless loser.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot better with his roles now. But yeah, he can. Well, that's the reason I think Woody Allen cast him, because Woody Allen always sees himself in those main roles.
Yeah.
And he also realizes that if he wasn't in so much trouble, that he could have played himself in all these roles. Not if he's a younger character like Owen Wilson plays in this. This had to be somebody else. But anybody that's in that character of a main character in a Woody Allen role is always neurotic. Neurotic is his like number one feature, because Woody Allen
is neurotic.
That's his whole shtick, was I'm this neurotic guy who does not know what I want or how
Scorsese
I feel.
Scorsese wasn't even neurotic until he met him.
Yeah.
That's how neurotic he was.
It was a fabulous movie, and it's one of those situations. And there was like a couple different twists in the movie, and at some point they were able to go back to like...
Did they market this movie enough? Because I feel like I stumbled on it.
Oh, yeah. This was one of the ones everyone stumbled on. The name was weird. Midnight in Paris. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't tell
you anything.
It
sounded like a love story.
Yep. And there is a certain level Very of small, love story. That French girl that he meets.
It has exactly the level that I'm...
That doesn't take you out of it. Nope. And it's interesting as shit. And definitely, people, check out Midnight in Paris. Especially if you're a non... Woody Allen fan, which I'm not a really big Woody Allen fan at all. His older movies, I could not stand, like Annie Hall or any of those. I went through a period where I was like, I should watch these movies to know what they were. And I watched them and I was like, yeah, these aren't mine. The only one I really cared for was Crimes and Misdemeanors. I thought that was a fucking fantastic movie with Martin Landau. Really good. Martin Landau like killed his... Martin Landau was like 80 and he killed his wife in the movie and everything. And the whole rest of the movie is him trying to get away with it. And I was like, holy shit, this is not what I thought this movie was going to be. Yeah, like really, really good. But other than Crimes and Misdemeanors, Midnight in Paris is, I think, the only other Woody Allen movie I own. So, how about you?
I don't own any.
None? Woody Allen. All right. Well, what do you got?
Is he still in trouble? I can never tell.
Oh, yeah. He's just, well, especially in the kind of this era, too. They have no tolerance for that. And he's old, and people like just.
But
just
he's not
retire.
Banished.
I don't think he's banished. He's not like, what's his name?
He didn't get Cosby, obviously.
No, but what's his name? Who doesn't even leave France? Polanski. Polanski doesn't even leave France anymore.
Well, he can't. He'll be arrested immediately.
Well, he can't go back to the States. I'm sure
he'll be arrested.
I'm sure he can go to Germany or whatever. But
Germany might arrest him and turn him over to us.
Really?
So, yeah. France doesn't have an extradition treaty. That means
France doesn't have an extradition treaty to us.
Not to us. No.
Fuck! I didn't think that. I thought you had to go like random, like South America.
Surprise! All the people you think would have one don't have one in France.
That's weird.
But I think France is like, it's because they don't believe in the death penalty.
Well, and they still believe that you could probably get married to a 16-year-old over there and it's not that big of a deal to them.
I didn't say it. I will dispute neither of those statements.
From your mouth to God's ears. Yeah. All right, what do you got for your next 94 movie?
I'm still going A-list movies. I am going to do Pulp Fiction
because
I didn't read it yet, but I bookmarked it. Tarantino gave the Gimp a backstory.
What? I never knew that. That's funny.
And you can
crazy.
Go online and read about it.
That
I
would have been something
it.
Great
and
in
maybe
that movie.
Maybe the article
critic.
Was joking, but
if he had gone through that movie critic, which was another
Did you see
big
that
news,
he pulled out of that.
Yeah, he pulled
That's
out of
really
it.
Really weird. They got quite a bit of ways into
I'm
the production, not filming, but
I'm wondering if some of the stuff was getting out too much because he almost completely pulled. Do you remember when Michael Madsen's script accidentally got released for The Hateful Eight, and he almost shit canned the whole thing?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's something like that, and Tarantino's like, fuck it, I'm not doing it. But I don't know why he's kind of pigeonholing into my last film.
Might not have been working.
Yeah, I mean,
who wants to go out? He said he's going to go out after this. He said that from the beginning.
He did. I'm still.
You didn't believe him, but
I'm still hoping that he does other stuff. And I'm eager to what he's going to do next.
He's like, I'm only doing television.
Pulp Fiction was like an extraordinary, and it just, like you said, it just turned 30. They just had have you seen
I saw a reunion, but I didn't
watch it. The reunion was really good, because people were, I saw Travolta there with his daughter,
Uma Thurman was there. He looked the best out of all of them, and he was the one that was kind of dumpy looking when the movie took place.
Samuel, they all look good. Samuel looks good. Obviously, Bruce did not show up for it. What? But you know who did, which was great? I saw a great clip. Because they were pulling, people that were. Not, I mean, maybe some of those character actors in it probably showed up, but some of the people that kind of were important to Travolta showed up. And I saw a great clip. You could probably pull it up on YouTube, where he's given an interview and he suddenly gets surprised by that tall black guy Washington from Welcome Back, Kotter. Just came up behind him and grabbed him. He turned his head and he was so shocked. And they had this whole conversation and everything. I was like, shit, I didn't even know that guy was alive, because I know Epstein's dead. Yeah. But he just looked like this cool old dude. And I was like, oh shit, it's Washington from fucking Welcome Back, Kotter. I think that's awesome.
Mr. Kotter.
This was a movie that I had known about, I think, before almost anybody, because I was a huge Reservoir Dogs fan. And I saw the trailer for this movie when it had won the Palme d'Or award. Right after that it won the Palme d'Or award.
Right?
And it was probably 93 that it actually won the award.
When did the movie come in the theater?
I think 94, but I think it was the end of 94.
Not Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, Reservoir Dogs was probably 03. Let me look
at. I'm just trying to see.
Pulp Fiction, I want to know.
Because there is a good chance I saw Pulp Fiction first.
You did, because I was working at the video store and I got it. No, this was before I was working at the video store, I think.
You still had.
We were living in Deep Creek.
Okay.
You and me, because I watched it with Ed for the first time, because I remember us watching it at that apartment that we had there in Deep Creek. And halfway through the movie, Ed was a smoker, so we had to stop and go out on the porch and smoke cigarettes. And we stopped at it like right after the cop's ear thing. It was like, dude, can you believe this movie? This movie is fucking good. This movie is fucking crazy. And we just kept geeking out over it and everything. And then it was my job to tell everyone about it. So Pulp Fiction was released October 14th, 94. I was up north. I had to drive to like Providence to see it, and I watched it by myself up north. I guess Eric wasn't available, or he didn't want to go or something. And I remember coming home and saying, I just watched the most incredible movie. And I think shortly after that, I went up north.
Dad wouldn't have liked it. Too many F words.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He wouldn't have. He had a fit with Reservoir Dogs, so he wouldn't have liked Pulp Fiction. Eventually, I went down to Port Charlotte, because I remember when I was going on that spree of seeing. I saw it 9 times in the theater. I don't know why I didn't push myself.
We had the 10. You had the poster collection.
The poster. It was everywhere.
Posters were great. That it was very. He thought it out well. Like, they were very pop art.
Yeah, we had them all over our apartment when we were living here in Gainesville, and that great CD store is the one that sold them all downtown. That's not there anymore. But man, I love that place. Yeah, let's talk a little Pulp Fiction and how just crazy wild it is. I mean, we're all familiar with Pulp Fiction. We can probably just jump and talk about some of our favorite scenes and kind of the best stuff about it. Did you recently rewatch it, or you just...
I haven't recently rewatched it.
What is some of your, like... What I love about rewatching Quentin Tarantino movies, and that's what made going see it in the theater so many times good, because you're always waiting for the one scene that you can't
it's
wait.
Really messed up.
I'm like, oh my god, the Gimp scene's coming up. Oh my god, the scene with fucking Travolta gets shot.
Some of his movies, some of his movies, his dialogue got older.
Yeah.
Like some of the later movies, it's like, I'm like, eh. But this one,
sharp.
Just
super sharp.
Like the relationship between Jules and what's his name?
Travolta's character, Vincent Vega.
Vega. Jules,
who is related in the universe of Quentin Tarantino to Michael Madsen's character in Reservoir Dogs. It's like his brother or his cousin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, also named Vega was his last. Mr. Blonde's name was last name was,
so they
was
thought
Vega.
About it.
So yeah, he thought it through. The only weak part of Pulp Fiction at all, the only part that you're like, is with the French girlfriend of Bruce
I didn't
was.
Mind it. She was really cute.
She was cute, but it was like that stuff and the stuff with the taxi driver. It just kind of brought the whole movie down a little bit. But then they bolted you right back up. Because shortly after that, that's when Harvey Keitel.
The taxi driver scene, I didn't mind either because he was Butch.
Esmeralda Villalobos. That was her name. See, I can tell you the name of the cab driver.
She was turned on that he had killed somebody.
I know. It was crazy. There's some wild parts of that movie that you forget about. You forget how wild
the scene was. That whole scene was just crazy.
It was crazy.
It was crazy.
It was the lead up to it and then
because
it happening.
The lead up to it was crazy. You're like, oh shit, he's going to blow this guy's head off in the store.
Well, even before that, remember when Bruce gets sees him in the crosswalk and runs him over. And Kathy Griffin, of all people, are the ones that come over is the first face he sees. I saw everything. That guy just ran. That guy was a maniac. He ran right through that red light. He says, what guy? He says, that guy. And he turns and sees him. Man, such good. This was our first Ving Rhames movie, too. We had never heard of or seen Ving Rhames in like anything. We might have in like a character actor and didn't in the background, just not really who he was, but
just the
damn.
Honestly, my favorite scenes are like when they already had the body in the garage and they were talking to Quentin Tarantino and the wolf, but not like when they were riding up the escalator to getting ready to go into the apartment. Just the really mundane, just like
he made that type of dialogue like popular.
Like,
and
that's
famous,
what they
man.
Would talk about. It's like
they
wouldn't be just
natural.
All sitting there like game faces on.
There's a reason that Quentin Tarantino, he might not always win Best Picture. He might want win Best Director. He normally doesn't. But he's almost always going to be up there and threatening for the screenplay because no one writes like Quentin Tarantino does. He's always going to win Best Screenplay unless something freakish happens that year and somebody else has it. Nine almost near perfect movies, really. And it's just what level you're on with which one you were talking about. How is Pulp Fiction number one with you in that list of Quentin Tarantino movies? It's hard. I have this conversation with people a lot, and I love it because I'm always interested in where people put what they put like their least favorite of him because it's hard, you know.
This
so many
stayed
good ones.
Laid back for a lot longer than Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Reservoir Dogs was sort of like you didn't really even have time to.
It was tight, and you were unsure what was going on. And
you didn't have time to enjoy or laugh at the
line.
You
liked Reservoir Dogs more than Pulp?
No, I
like
Pulp Fiction more.
Is that your number one, Tarantino?
I would think so.
I think it's my number one, but I think the two and three would have to be rounded off with Reservoir Dogs and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is definitely number two. I would watch that again. I don't need to see Reservoir Dogs again.
Ooh, I couldn't give up watching Reservoir Dogs. Because then you go into Jackie Brown, Kill Bill, you're going to Glorious Bastards, which gets better every time you see it. Everyone forgets
how
good it is.
I've seen that a lot.
Oh, I've seen, and same with The Hateful Eight. It grows on me every time I see it.
Hateful Eight, there's a point where it should have ended. It should have ended long before they were sitting in the bed waiting.
Yeah, yeah.
Like as soon as they killed her or something.
It did. It carried out. He has problems wrapping things up every once in a while, but.
Pull the plug on this one. It's perfect.
Pulp Fiction did a couple of those things, though, that you didn't expect for sure, like telling the narrative kind of out of order. Allowed them to show.
He really started that.
Well, it allowed you to show you John Travolta die, but not leave the movie, you know, because you see him die, and
pretty
then two scenes later, he's in the coffee shop with Jules talking about his bad motherfucker wallet, you know, and it's just crazy that he made that popular.
Like, that was an intense scene. The needle in the heart was an intense scene.
There's there's like 50 great filmmakers that have Quentin Tarantino to thank for the film style that he did. Yeah. The Boondock Saints guy comes to mind faster than anybody because that narrative that could have been a Tarantino fucking movie, man. It really could have. So
unpolish it a little bit.
Yeah, unpolish.
It was a little too.
I love it, man.
Polished up.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what my favorite. I agree with you. I think the wolf stuff is some of my favorite stuff in that movie. But and it got shafted at the 94 Oscars, and one screenplay. I know it won Best Screenplay, but it was up against another movie for an 94 that won. I won't mention it in case that's your final film. For me,
I'm doing 94. So
yeah. You well, that's 91. What I'm saying. 94. No, 94.
Oh, okay.
It got robbed the Oscar for it, which it probably shouldn't have compared to what won, but it still was worthy enough. All right, my second one. It's going to continue with my comedy theme, and this was one that I had just recently rewatched because I watched the third one, and the third one was funny, and I thought I did not like the third one as much, so I was like, I got to go rewatch the first one because I thought the first one was freaking almost a damn near perfect movie. I got the dates right here, too. I want to get the date right. Okay, so
Cave Dwellers 2?
2009, and it is 2009's The Hangover. Man, I love The Hangover, man. It's one of those great movies that you forget when you revisit it how fucking perfect and great it was. And the introduction to some of the biggest stars we have today, it was like the first time any of us had seen Bradley Cooper. Is it Bradley Cooper? And Zach Galifianakis. Definitely the first time I've seen Zach. I mean, some people may have seen him as doing his stand-up and everything, and he had done maybe a couple minor things. But man, talk about a coming-out party for Zach playing this friggin' weird-ass role in that movie. And Ed Helms. Was Dr.
Young...
Yeah, he's in this. The comedian? Yeah. Doctor, was that his name? Doctor...
Well, he is a doctor.
Dr. Ken, I think is what they call him. Yeah, Dr. Ken.
He was a practicing like surgeon or like internalist or something, like making a ton of money and just did it on comedy on the side.
And it's weird the comedy he was doing.
He's making 10 times.
He was butt-ass naked in this movie. Remember, he was in the trunk. He was the one that they were driving around the trunk and they opened the trunk at one point and he jumped out like a spider monkey. Completely new.
He's living the life, too.
Oh, he was totally living the life,
man. He got to be the doctor. He got to be a high-end doctor for a long time and then he just stepped right in.
Well, and then he's on one of those Fox shows now. The Masked Singer. He's one of the guys he's one of the judges because he's funny and he's perfect for that type of stuff. So The Hangover, perfect premise. All these buddies are going to get together. They're going to go to Vegas. They're going to have the night of their lives. The brilliant part of this, and this was Todd Phillips who directed this, and people forget Todd Phillips did all three of the Hangover movies, and then he went on to did the Joker. You know, and he was like, holy shit, are we not going to see him do these comedy movies anymore? Because obviously he's in a different realm now and he's the same guy doing the Joker 2.
I would imagine there's not a lot, other than financial and esteem, there's not a lot of like creativity you can put into because the story's already there. Yeah. You're the director. Go out and get the frames.
This was a tight script. Whereas that's why Joker's, this worked.
That was dark and brooding, and you had to really work to get the shots.
I would think, that he had no problem. He must have been a superhero fan. I mean, you don't go into that transition unless you are. But he was perfect in comedies, and I think he did other comedies besides The Hangover that I'm thinking of. But so all these buddies are getting together. I can't never remember the fourth one, but I think he became a little bit more famous in the sequels and everything. But
is he in The Office?
You're talking about Ed Helms?
Yeah.
No, Ed Helms might have come from The Office. I'm not sure where he came from. But no, not him. The fourth guy that got left on the roof, the actual groom that they're having the bachelor party for.
I don't remember the movie.
Because the whole movie is they have this great night in Vegas and they lose the groom. And then they cut. So they're having shots on the roof and then they do a time cut to them waking up in the apartment and everything had gone down. And they don't remember a single thing.
Sounds like so one they're finding, weekend I had in Miami.
It's great. They're finding details that they have to use and string together to what they did the night before. And then
I'm pretty sure I'm in a German porn from the mid-2000s.
So it's a really great premise in how they did it. So like when they wake up in the apartment, they realize Ed Helms missing a tooth. The room is trashed. Zach Galifianakis goes in the bathroom and there's a tiger in the bathroom. They don't know where the tiger came from. All of a sudden when they're looking for their friend Doug, they hear a baby crying. There's a baby in the apartment. They don't know where the baby came from. They find photos that one of them got married to Heather Graham. Ed Helms got married to Heather Graham the night before. So
he's already married.
Now they have to basically go back to, they have only what was in their pockets to kind of start the search of what happened.
It's like a game of Clue. Almost.
Yeah, it really is. And then one clue leads to another, and eventually will lead them back up to the roof.
The tiger's where the guy. Tough.
The tiger was great because the tiger was Mike Tyson. At some point, they went to Mike Tyson's house and stole his tiger, and that whole scene.
The tiger
great.
Let you do that?
It's that great scene where Mike Tyson's listening to Phil Collins. Oh, so good. This is my favorite part. Listen, and he punches Ed Helms in the face. Ed Helms gets the Mike Tyson tattoo on his cheek. So funny, man. It's just one funny scene after another, man. If you haven't seen it in a long time, you need to revisit The Hangover.
That's why you don't go and have the time of your life.
Yeah.
Ever.
Each one of those ones had some interesting stuff. I thought that they kind of, one was perfect, two was decent, but and then by the time three happened, they started replaying the same jokes over and over again. But I watched a little bit of number three when I was up north. My cousin had it on, and I was like, damn, I forgot how funny some of those parts in number three were. But It was. They did that horrible thing where they just started repeating the same things over and over again.
That's the problem. You can tell all the funny jokes in the world, but if you can't set them up with the storyline to support it.
Change it enough where it's not like the same thing. I know they want to, we want to recapture that beautiful thing that we had back in the day. And
but it could be its own thing with the same funny formula.
For sure. But like I said, the first one, absolutely perfect.
Here's the problem. Bankers.
Bankers?
Bankers.
Yeah, they want to know
they
their money.
They want to know that their money is safe. You're going to follow the script. You're going to stick to the script.
Not only safe, that you're going to make them money on top of it. But
what it was the blog I got sucked into, and I can't even remember it. It was a highest grossing movies of the 70s or 80s or something. It was pretty.
That's funny. I was just on a blog where they were talking about the
they show it to me on my
those
phone.
Blair Witch Project kids.
Yeah, they showed that on my feed too.
They want more money.
They want to get. I want residuals. Well, did you sign a contract with the residuals?
Because they had a contract that if it made more than $1 million, they would get a certain amount. So they've gotten a decent chunk of it. They didn't get a chunk. I remember compared to what it made, I think it made $280 million, and
but they got a million or two.
It cost $60,000 to make. Still the number one biggest fucking indie film ever made. So they hear that and it just makes them twitch. They're like, oh, I want to get paid more.
But if they made $1 million each.
Yeah. Come on, dudes. You made $1 million.
You spent $60,000. You would have done it for free. You were
2 weeks in the woods.
Yeah. We had a great time. Yeah. Somebody got.
And you're still talking about it. There's probably never a party that they go to where the words Blair Witch Project does not come out of their
They're
mouth.
They're surfing that thing until the end of time. That's the problem.
I hear you were an actor. Were you in a movie? I don't know.
But.
Funny you should ask.
That's why, it pays to have longevity.
Yeah.
Like Samuel Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
What are you going to talk to him about? I want to talk about this first. I want to talk about that. But wait a minute. Black Snake Moan. Why did they have to call it that? Because that's very misleading, Mr. Jackson.
Very true. All right. So, let's go back to 94. While you do that, I'm going to pull up the 94 Oscars because...
I'm about to talk about the winner, I think.
Okay, so 1994 Oscar winners. Nominees and winners, good. All right, go ahead. What do we got?
We got Forrest Gump.
Oh, Forrest Gump. It's weird. I've been seeing a bunch of Forrest Gump stuff this week. It must be all the 30 years type thing. Yeah. But the meme I'm seeing this week is... I've seen it on several different platforms, too. People are like... all you people are trying to pick the worst villain ever, and we all know the answer. And they're all showing like Gump's wife. What's her name?
Jenny.
Jenny. They're all showing Jenny Gump, and they're showing different scenes where she was a fucking dick to Forrest.
And then
you're like,
still takes her back.
And then
he
still takes her back at the end. It's great. So I was gonna look up here and see it won Best Actor, right?
Tom Hanks won Best Actor. Maybe he didn't.
Why are they not showing me just list?
I think he won. He definitely won for. He definitely won for the one where he's trapped on the island. What was that one called?
That one was Castaway.
Castaway. Man, I have to. I purge my knowledge of stuff every day.
Oh, that's why it's not pulling up. I'm pulling up 95. It would be 94. All right, so why don't you break through what Forrest Gump is out about if people are not familiar.
Forrest Gump is a story of a man with limited intellect. That's how I get, that's the tone. That's the term we have to use right now. If you grew up in Boston,
you can use different terms.
I won't say it, but
you can use several different terms that they still use up there for sure.
Oh yeah.
Every time we talk about Forrest Gump 2, and it reminds me of an earlier film, it's almost a play on The World According to Garp. If you're a Forrest Gump fan, go back and watch The World According to Garp. Yeah. It's almost the same type of fucking movie. It's obviously all the situations are different, but it's the same type of this guy lived the craziest life, you're never going to believe it, and here's us going to tell you about it.
I mean, it's a story of determination anyways.
Yeah, for sure.
He literally... What's great about, I realized this movie later on in life, is pick a scene if you have 20 minutes or something.
Yeah, that's true.
Pick a scene, and there's several, like the Vietnam stuff, like it changes eras.
That Vietnam stuff's awesome.
The shrimp boat on with Lieutenant Dan, the stuff in the hotel with him visiting him on New Year's Eve, the Washington stuff. I mean, there's always something you can jump around and pick. Some people
the running part at the end. When he's got the beard and he's inventing happy face shirts and stuff like that. And it's,
I'll give that. That's like putting the pigeon to shaking his head in the James Bond, movie. It's like, you didn't need that. They did that. They did Sometimes Shit Happens.
Oh, yeah.
And they made the bumper sticker out of it. And they did the quick cut to the car getting like rear-ended.
It's funny, man. I mean, Zemeckis is one of Zemeckis' best films. If you can stand Tom Hanks doing his little kind of voice and everything. Yeah. But that was...
I bought into it right away.
No, I bought into it. It's one of those movies that I've avoided watching a long time.
Whatever he wants.
Yeah, the only time I think, even as Colonel Parker in the Elvis movie, you were like, you know, like, I don't know. I've seen the commercials for it. I don't know if I can listen to it.
And he did the weird voice in the Bank Robbery movie. He did the weird ass voice in did the Boston accent when he was on the run with his son.
Yep. Road to Perdition. Catch Me If You Can. He had one too. Yeah. I guess he is always doing weird accents. Some of them work, some of them don't.
I don't even know what his... I mean, Bachelor Party probably be his original accent.
Yeah, yeah. If you watch Bachelor Party or fucking The Burbs.
It's funny, even before The Bachelor Party, when he did Bosom Buddies.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yep. I remember that show on
TV. Yeah. I remember Bosom Buddies.
And he was just funny. Yep. He was just naturally funny.
I remember him on Family Ties.
But he's one of those dudes on Family Ties. He made the transition seamlessly.
Yep. Very good. It starred... This movie...
He wasn't intentionally funny in this movie at all. Like...
No. No, he just kind of played it.
He had folksy wisdom that was kind of funny every once in a while, but it was like...
Gary Sinise was unbelievable in this movie. Maleke Williamson, or I can never pronounce his first name, but this Bubba Gump, he was awesome in this movie. I just saw him in something recently.
Somebody said that the war reenactments were really good in this, like true to form.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love the Vietnam stuff. That's some of my favorite stuff. Like, if I'm going to watch this movie, like you said, I'm going to jump forward, I'd probably jump... I mean, I like the stuff where he initially joins up and he's like at the rally with Jenny and everything. Just past the I'm going to be sitting on the bus stop type of thing. I think that's where it turns a lot of people off, the way it starts, you know, with the bus stop and everything. It takes a little while to get into. And then when you're into it, you're like, okay, I get what's going on here.
Yeah, the hippie movement was, and she was sort of, he was chasing the idea of her as a child his whole life.
I was like,
because that's
why is Buttercup a bitch?
she just wanted to live her life. She didn't see herself with someone.
Yeah.
And
she played that character well.
He loved her unconditionally.
Yeah.
It's a great love story.
It is a great love story. I still remember telling my wife about it one day. And
I'm not one that likes love stories.
I started tearing up when I started telling her the story about it. It's the last movie that I ever thought I would tear up about when I was telling my wife about it. But it was a beautiful story of what the Forrest Gump character did for her, like you said, unconditionally.
Yeah.
And she's a dick even to the end. Surprise, I'm back. I got AIDS, and now you're going to take care of my fucking kid.
You
got
to sleep with me first.
Fuck.
Forrest Gump, too.
Yeah.
This is a funeral.
And do you remember who the kid was in the movie who played young Forrest Gump?
Yes, if you hadn't asked me.
Super young.
Does he see dead people?
He does see dead people. Haley Joel Osment.
Nice. He's so funny he does a few of the drunk history reenactment stuff.
He plays
stuff.
Hitler in one of them, didn't he?
He's so good.
Yeah, he's so funny, man. I love him and all the different stuff he does later.
I don't know what he's doing now, but he needs to do more.
He was great in Tusk. Really he was great as the podcaster in Tusk. I thought he was super funny in that. Yeah, I love Haley Joel. I think he's still doing it. And he's still pretty humble about his like beginnings and everything, and he'll talk to anybody
Being a child actor
and
successfully making any type of transition whatsoever.
You're either going to be a dick or you're going to be just humble.
You make a transition and you're able to do it later on in life.
Yeah.
Because if you get to a certain point, if you have 40 movies under your belt, you're going to get work.
So because some of them just do, like, I was just reading that the other day, the kid from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. That's the only movie he did. The kid from Willy Wonka. He just did that that character as Charlie for the fucking film, and that was all.
Yeah.
So he didn't get famous for anything else. So he probably was not destroyed. If you've watched that All Quiet on the Set documentary on HBO, man, you'd realize how fucking...
What's that documentary about?
It's called Quiet on the Set. It's all about kids, specifically during the Nickelodeon run, who were either molested or treated horribly. And do you know who the head guy?
Mark Summerall?
No, Mark Summers does talk about it on there. On the head guy, I don't even... just until recently did I realize he was the head of Nickelodeon, and apparently he allowed all this to happen. He wasn't I don't think he was actually molesting people, but he knew about it and he was allowing it to happen. And he was mistreating everybody. Was the kid who played Ricky from Better Off Dead. He's also head of the class. The fat kid from head of the class.
He's
the head of Nickelodeon.
He's the head of Nickelodeon. Yeah.
And this documentary is destroying him. He cannot leave.
It's a recent documentary.
Recent. It's still episode. It's episodic.
Oh, so he's done.
Yeah, he's done.
He's
come out trying to defend his. They're pulling back.
If they find out you knew and you knew, then.
He was putting so much adult humor in those.
They took Penn State Joe Paterno's statue down.
Yeah. No, what they did to some of these kids like that Josh.
They loved Joe Paterno.
These were shows that we were too old to watch, but remember there was a show on Nickelodeon called Josh and Drake and the Ariana Grande show, and they all started through that and everything. And they start going back and showing some of the what they considered comedy, and it was nothing but they're doing like cum shots on these poor girls' face, and these kids did not know what the fuck the jokes meant and everything. And super adult humor. You're like, how is this flying? And they're playing it for the audience during the documentary, and you're like, that wasn't really on the show, was it? And they were like, no, that was in the show. That's what they were interjecting to these shows and everything.
And they were the pedophile.
They were
network.
Hiring. There was like three or four pedophiles on the cast, like, of all these shows they're like working as camera assistants and everything. Right. That main kid, Josh, was molested by one of them, and the guy's in prison right now. It's a fucked up show about pedophiles in Hollywood, basically, is what it is. And
like, it's hard. Like, Spotlight was an awesome movie, and I have seen it twice.
Spotlight's one of the more palatable ones.
It's still about pedophilia.
It is.
It's like,
yeah.
It's such a weird subject to.
Yeah. My spend an movie. Hour.
It'd be like watching a movie where an animal gets hurt an hour and a half.
I can't do that.
Even though they didn't really hurt him, they threw fake blood on him for an hour and a half. I'm still like, ugh, I don't want to think about hurt animals for an hour and a half.
No hurt animals in Forrest Gump.
So, Forrest Gump, if my recommendation, if you can't have 3 hours to watch the whole thing or 2 hours, whatever, pick a scene. It works within itself.
So, some of the best picture nominees that were up against Forrest Gump, which won, Four Weddings and a Funeral, don't get that at all being up there. But three movies that are absolutely incredible. This was back when they only had five movies.
I know one of them.
Up, so
let me guess one.
Sure.
Shawshank,
Pulp Fiction, Quiz Show. I love
Quiz Show.
I love all three of those fucking movies. Four of those five movies are unbelievable. Looking back now, and as much as I love Pulp Fiction, Shawshank should have devoured that. There's no way. Shawshank is arguably the best movie ever made. Most people almost will argue that it is the best movie ever made. I mean, Shawshank's a perfect
fucking movie.
The script
is perfect.
Everything about it.
The cinematography is perfect. The music is perfect. The acting is perfect.
So Tom Hanks won, became the fifth person to win back-to-back acting Oscars. He won one for Philadelphia then, I guess, the year before. So Forrest Gump won six Oscars, including Best Film, Best Director for Robert Zemeckis, Screenplay. Oh, won Screenplay. So Pulp Fiction didn't even win Screenplay. I think it was just nominated. So I wonder if Pulp Fiction won any awards at all that year. That's crazy.
It won Cult Movie of the Year.
It definitely won Cult Movie of the Year.
Like, everybody liked Forrest Gump, but everybody loved Pulp Fiction. Everybody that loved Pulp Fiction loved Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, absolutely.
And saw it five times. Oh, nobody's going to see...
That was one of those movies that
nobody's
everyone...
Nobody's going to see Forrest Gump five times in a row.
No. And Pulp Fiction's one of those movies when it came
out,
too.
His movies make me want to do that sometimes. Like, Once Upon a Time, I could have seen it one more time in the theater.
Yep.
I saw it already.
I only saw it once in the theater. I would have totally gone seen it. I've seen it three or four times outside the theater. So
seen it twice outside.
Movies are super rewatchable, for sure. Well, here's another 90s movie. My last one's a 90s movie, but it's 97. And I'm not sure how... I know you know this movie and you like this movie, but I'm not sure you've seen it recent enough to remember why you liked it. Because I was very similar, and I always loved this movie. I always owned it on VHS, and I went back to rewatch it, and I was like, it'll be fun. It'll be funny. And I was like, holy shit, I forgot how this movie held up so much. It's 1997's Nothing to Lose, starring Martin Lawrence and Shawshank Redemption's own Andy Dufresne, Tim Robbins.
what's his John Travolta's wife is in this.
Yep. She's Kelly Preston's in this. And one of the persons
I had a crush on her from Space Camp. I don't know when Space Camp came out.
Good from Space Camp all the way until we lost her. She was stunning, stunning woman. And I loved her in all those. The only thing I didn't like her because I don't like her playing a bitch as much as Jerry Maguire. Oh, she was so horrible in Jerry Maguire. I don't like Kelly Preston being bitch. I like to think of her as that Space Camp girl who had the photographic memory and who was just had the sparkles on her face. And I just loved her so much in that. But Nothing to Lose, man.
Don't accidentally launch your space shuttle. That's the
that's what it is. Jinx sent Max to space. Joaquin Phoenix, early Joaquin as Leaf Phoenix. But anyways, Nothing to Lose. Some of the best character actors in this movie. So what's going on in the movie, and it's also a great premise. So Tim Robbins is super in love with his wife, who's played by Kelly Preston. I'm gonna reveal the ending before before I get there, because it leads to some really fun stuff. So he comes home from work. His boss is Michael McKean from Spinal Tap. He's Lenny from Laverne and Shirley. And he's got a perfect life. And he comes home. She mentions in passing that her sister's coming to visit. He comes home and surprises his wife on a Friday night. His wife's sister's not coming for a week, so they got the place all to themselves. He comes home, he sees cufflinks on the table, and then he hears noises upstairs, and he goes upstairs, and he sees through the bedroom door somebody that looked like his wife on top of somebody having sex. He goes downstairs, he drops the flowers that he dropped, and he just leaves the house. So it turns out his wife's sister came a week early, and he did not see his wife having an affair with him, but everything he's about to go in through is because he thinks his wife's having an affair.
Reminds me of that Dabney Coleman movie when he got
Short Time. That's the same type of thing. This miscommunication.
He doesn't give a fuck now.
Makes for great screenplay, great plot points for sure, and it made great for this. So he is just distraught, and he's driving through L.A. and he's at
a giant SUV.
Yep, he's at a stoplight.
And the casting is great because one of them is 6'5". And the other one's 5'3".
So Martin Lawrence comes into the car, just opens up the door, gets in, and he's carjacking Tim Robbins. And Tim Robbins has the best line. He says, "Oh, man, you picked the wrong day to mess with me." And then he just guns it. And so much so that Martin Lawrence screaming, and "Please stop, please stop." And Tim Robbins like, "Oh, but you want my wallet? You want my wallet?" And he just throws his entire wallet outside the window, which leads to some great stuff too, because very similar to Midnight Run, they have to kind of figure out how to make money and stuff. So then he just drives into the middle of nowhere, and Martin Lawrence is like, "Just please don't kill me, Mr. Freaky Jason. Just don't kill me." Martin Lawrence is so funny.
I'm not even a huge Martin Lawrence fan, but I love him
neither.
In this movie.
He's so funny in this movie. What's really great that's also going around in this movie is you have two actual criminals, a white guy and a black guy, that are known by the law, that are going out and they're robbing places and everything. So they get mistaken for them several times in the movie. Well, those two guys are just comedy gold in this movie. And I mentioned when I was talking earlier about how some actors make a transition and they stop being this one type of actor and they becoming they're now the dad character. Well, this was the last time we saw Giancarlo Esposito be fucking funny as shit, man. Because once he did Breaking Bad, he is just that stoic. You will not see him do comedy anymore.
If you want to watch Tim Robbins' arc, watch Mystic River right after this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of those were but Giancarlo Esposito, all he does in this movie is laugh maniacally and suck on lollipops, and he's super funny. You forget how he was that guy. And his partner in the movie is John C. McGinley. And John C. McGinley is so fucking funny. He's the guy from Scrubs and from Platoon. I don't think I'm going to make it. And he stabs himself in the leg. Does he stab himself in the leg?
Corey
That's Corey Glover. No, he's the one who's just disappointed because they won't let him fucking go on his leave. I don't think I'm going to make it.
No, man. he was going home.
Yeah, and then they canceled it. I can't send you home now.
I think he was going home.
I felt his pain in that movie, but he was great in Scrubs. He's great in everything, man. I love John C. McGinley. So those two guys interact with Tim Robbins and Martin Lawrence several times in it. But it's just like you said, they have several scenes where they're fighting in the desert together, and Martin Lawrence is just laughing at Tim Robbins because he's doing that 1930s boxing stance and everything. And then he does that great run to him and he hits him on the top of the head with his elbow and everything. It's just comedy gold with those two guys.
I'm surprised they didn't redo that one or someone.
Oh, it didn't even need it to. There's a great
With two other people.
There's a great scene where they actually go back into the city and he has to stay at Martin Lawrence's house and he meets his wife and his family. He's got this great family, a beautiful wife with two kids, and his mother is living with him. And do you remember, it's one of the most famous scenes in the movie where the mother slaps Martin Lawrence. It's the old woman from Lady Killers. And she's hilarious in it. She slaps Martin Lawrence. He's, "Why are you hitting me, Mom?" And then he says, "Yeah, you don't need to be hitting him." And she smacks Tim Robbins. He's like, "Why'd you hit me?" He says, "But you got that one because you were with him." It's just super, super funny, man. But the really great part of this movie is he thinks Michael McKean is the one who slept with Kelly Preston, his wife. So he's... brilliant ideas. Now I'm teamed up with this hardened criminal. Let's break into the office that he... this is 97, too, so a lot of the security is not as good, and they don't have, like, fingerprint pads or cameras that could catch Tim Robbins coming into the office building. So they literally just have to distract...
Back in the Stone Age.
Well, you just have to distract one guard, and then you could slip in and go up the elevator and shit. Yeah. Basically, they threw a rock, and it went through a window, and they waited till the guard checked, and they went up there. But there was, like, this laser grid. Then Martin Lawrence has this secret ability to be a very tech guy, so he bypasses it. It gives him 5 minutes, and they go in the office, and they steal all Michael McKean's money out of the safe. But then earlier in the movie, they had showed Michael McKean had bought this very phallic statue with this huge dick on it. Yeah. And, Tim Robbins takes a knife and, like, slices it off at the camera. And right before he walks right up to the camera and takes his fucking mask off and flips him off. He wanted Michael McKean, knew that he fucking knows that he fucked his wife and this is what you get for it and everything. And then they leave. And then just out of nowhere, Tim Robbins decides to call his wife. And his wife's like, "Where the fuck are you? We've been looking for you for days," and everything. He says, "I know what you've been doing." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "You asshole, that was my fucking sister that you saw. That wasn't me."
In his defense, would you expect to come home to your house and a guest that just came there is going...
It just happens to look just like his wife, too. The same hair.
In their bed.
Yeah.
You don't go to someone's house on a visit and have sex on their bed while they're not there.
If I had seen that, the next words would be like, "What the fuck?" Yeah. Very loud. So I would have seen a head turn and then gotten embarrassed and said, "Nope, continue. Sorry, made a mistake." But
and party foul.
The problem now is that he needs... to get Martin Lawrence to agree to bring the money back to the place.
He's already spent it in his mind.
Well, and I cut out the whole part where Giancarlo Esposito found the money. They intercepted the money, and they had the money at one point, and they had to get the money back from them. It was such a great thing. One of the funniest scenes in the movie, too, is earlier in the movie. You could tell that they were going to use this at some point in the movie, but they did it long enough that you forgot that Tim Robbins got gasoline all over his shoes. And you're like, "Oh, that's going to come back into something." And there's a great scene where he's got a spider on his head while they're driving. And Martin Lawrence turns to him and says, "Dude, you have a spider on your head." And Tim Robbins is like, "Hey, man, I'm not up into your hip hop lingo. What does that mean? I got a spider on my head. You're just going to have to use words that I understand." He's like, "You got a spider on your head." And then you see this big tarantula and he stops the car and he gets out. And he's like running back and forth so quick that he hits like a match on the ground and it lights his feet on fire. And some Martin Lawrence like takes a camcorder and starts recording Tim Robbins just running around with his feet on fire. And it was just so fucking funny, man. Definitely revisit it. This came out around the same time as Money for Nothing. Do you remember that was another one that was
Who was in it?
Charlie Sheen and Chris Tucker. Yeah. A lot of people confuse that movie for this movie. And man, Nothing to Lose, I think it's people forget about it. I don't think they play it anywhere. I never hear it mentioned. It was one of those movies that I just happened to be flipping through my comedy section in my DVDs.
No credit for being in it.
Oh, for being funny too, man. Go back and watch when's the last time or have you ever even seen the Tenacious D movie?
Yes.
That role that Tim Robbins plays in that movie is fucking wild, dude. It's a very weird, weird kind of role for him. He plays that guy with a limp that knows how to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they have to like... man, I love the Tenacious D movie. I may have to do that in one of my future wild cards again because it's so fucking funny. But Nothing to Lose, man. It was a great one. Everyone should check it out. So there we go. We got three pretty solid movies. Well, definitely for yours, because you picked a lot of Oscar winners.
I picked Oscar winners.
I don't think any of mine won Oscars.
Nope, neither.
Hangover, no. Midnight in Paris, nope. I think was nominated
probably
for some awards, but definitely not Nothing to Lose, for sure. But telling you, got nothing to lose to watch Nothing to Lose.
Did you see that Target announced they're no longer going to sell DVDs?
Best Buy's already stopped. They've cleared them out. Which is crazy, because online, it's still going pretty strong. Physical media is coming back, and people are going to be disappointed.
Stuff will get a little cheaper.
I'm telling you, if you don't have all the streaming things, you are not going to find movies.
When the apocalypse comes, where's your entertainment going to come from?
Paul's house. Come here. I can only fit a certain amount of people. I don't want to turn into like that Mother movie with Jennifer Lawrence when the house is filled with 150 people. But I'm telling you, I'll watch some movies here. That's for sure. I own all the movies we've talked about. So
he owns all the movies.
Yeah, I mean, I own a lot, that's for sure.
Maybe not Jeepers Creepers.
Well, now I'm trying to update the ones to Blu-ray, because there's a couple movies that I catch myself watching more and more every year.
I would stock up on Blu-ray.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
Players.
Well, I have one. I have one in the garage, unopened. I haven't even opened the package, just for emergency purposes if something happens.
If break glass.
If an emergency break glass, that'd be hilarious. I put it behind
put
glass
it behind
like
a
that.
Glass.
Yeah, yeah.
I would laugh.
But no, some of the movies that I watch multiple times a year, I realize that I don't want a crappy DVD copy, so I just updated my copy of Napoleon Dynamite. The Blu-ray's on its way, and there was another movie I just updated. Oh, the 1976 King Kong. The Blu-ray came out. Have you seen that in a while? The fucking Jeff Bridges one? God damn. Charles Grodin's in it and everything. The movie stars like 100 famous people, and it's really good.
Muppets Take Manhattan?
It was something like that. All right, well, that's going to be for this time. Me and Justin are going to be coming back to you maybe not next week. We're kind of averaging like 2 weeks or so, but we're still inching slowly but closer towards our 300 mark. I think this is 290, so we'll have a special celebration for that, and we'll have some good stuff coming. But if you want to reach out to us before then, you can hit us up email at fascinatedwithfilms@gmail.com, or you could a like or a comment on our two platforms, which is iTunes or SoundCloud, or you could just hit up me or Justin. Having trouble talking.
You have to pre-record this.
At least it's at the end of the episode where I'm stumbling with marbles in my mouth. You can jump over to Facebook where me and Justin, you can see us on there and you can communicate with
us. You've scrubbed all my pitches off of there?
What, you got pitch? Where you got pitch?
My pitch is on your Facebook.
Oh, shit, yeah. No, they're on there someplace. You're just not on there.
Damn it.
That's the best decision you ever made, not going on Facebook.
On social media?
Yeah. Certain social media I can't deal without, but Facebook I could give up in a second if it wasn't for the podcast. So it's the only reason I go on there. But it's the only reason you people should go on there. So come on in and check us out. We've got sharing all the pictures. You'll be able to just peruse what our previous weeks were about, and you can go check those episodes out. So till next week, see you.
Bye.
Please don't kill me, Freaky Jason.